Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, the new talk. Well, we have reached the end of September, and I'm going to cap off the month with a walk and talk podcast. The last time I did a podcast where I did a walk and talk, which wasn't too long ago, I ended up standing in the field, and I really didn't I didn't talk. I mean, I didn't walk. I talked, but I didn't walk. And so this time I'm actually going to try to walk and talk at the same time. And I don't know if I can do that. It's funny. I ended up sort of just stopping to concentrate on what I was thinking about. But tonight, and in this podcast, you may be listening to it during the day, so, you know, I apologize for saying tonight. But I'm thinking about a lot of different kind of fun things, so it should be easier to walk and talk because it's not going to be heavy. I don't want this to be heavy. I've done at least three, maybe four, pretty heavy, intense podcasts from the AgoraFest stuff to the stuff I did before that. So I think it's time just to just kind of have some fun. So we're going to do that in podcast 419, the last podcast of September 2015. Now, it's been a while since I talked about Bachland R&D, and I love when I get a chance to talk about Bachland R&D, because when it comes to tech and manufacturing, which I talk a lot about in these podcasts, I'm going to talk about history today, and, you know, tech and manufacturing is a big part of history. I think about Bachland R&D. Bachland isn't just a machine shop or manufacturer, but they're tool makers and innovators. I've talked about that. If you're starting the search for a manufacturer, learn about Bachland R&D and Bachland.com at Bachland.com, BAKLUND.com, including the latest development in Bachland micromachining and micromolding of implantable plastics and metals. Most small parts have to be assembled. It's complicated, it's costly, and with micromachining, Bachland manufactures small work with a single piece of material. The result is more accuracy, strength, and a more durable part. I had lunch with John not too long ago, and he carries around this little box that has these very tiny parts, and it's amazing. Micromolding starts at 0.003 cubic inches and below, and it's done in a clean room environment, which is perfect for medical devices and electronics. Don't forget to sign up for more of the webinars at Bachland. It explains micromachining, a lot of the stuff that Bachland does, 3D printing, things of that nature. If you want to stay on top of the latest developments at Bachland, it's Bachland.com. Remember, design and 3D printing, we've talked about that, wicked fast turnaround times, real client service, real resources about Bachland at Bachland.com, innovative solutions, Bachland Research and Development. Contact John Bachland or Vice President Tara Bachland at Bachland.com and ask about what they can do for you. Find out what energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imagination can do for your company today at Bachland.com. BAKLUND.com, Bachland.com. And thanks, John, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Got to thank the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast, Buzzlets, which I'll tell you more about in the podcast a little bit later on, and of course, Alpha Systems. Here's the thing about Alpha Systems. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. It's FAA approved. I had lunch with the head of Alpha Systems, Mark Corin, today, and I should have taken notes. Every time I have lunch with Mark, I actually should take notes. But he was telling me that Alpha Systems AOA is now being installed in a venerable Mitsubishi twin-engine aircraft, which I don't remember the exact designation of, and I know there's pilots listening, so I'm not going to make a fool of myself, but they're very excited about these devices being installed this as part of the avionics package in these Mitsubishi twin-engine passenger planes, which aren't manufactured anymore, but they keep them updated, obviously, and they're putting these in. So that's the story with Alpha Systems and the value of it. Click on the Alpha Systems banner for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. The banner is at the very top of the page. And yeah, it's light jacket weather. It's actually beautiful out here tonight. The moon is out, and I just mowed my lawn today, and I love mowing the lawn in the fall because you get all that mulch and stuff on the lawn, so I'm standing on my beautifully mowed lawn, and that makes me feel good. And we're going to do a walk and talk this podcast, 419. So I was just thinking, now, you know, I continue to scan. I'm off the news cleanse, so I continue to scan for the day's news events and watching all the things that I watch and, you know, being aware of the things that I'm aware. And I read one thing today which actually provoked this whole sort of thought process, which was, and it didn't start with this, but it ended with this, which was, if you were just going to be on the radio right now and you had to come up with something to talk about without any preparation or whatever, what would you talk about? And I decided what I would do is sort of riff on this story that, and I have to do a little politics to give you a preface to this and then riff on it a little bit because it really caused me to start thinking about history and how we would know what it was like if we could go back to another era. So really, this is about time travel. But if you're a supporter of Donald Trump, then you should be happy because one of the things that's already started is an effort by the mainstream media to tear down Trump. Now, you know, I'm not supporting Trump. I'm not supporting any of them. I'm not going to be in the tank for any of the candidates, Republican or Democrat or Independent or anybody else. I'm not going to do that. I hate it when talk show hosts and quote-unquote commentators either are for a candidate and they don't tell you, or they are obviously for a candidate. You know, this is your choice who you want to vote for in the primary, and it's your choice of who you want to vote for president. And I'm not going to tell you what to do or who to vote for or waste your time with coverage that kind of leads people to a particular candidate, just so you know. But anyway, it's clear to me that at this point, Donald Trump is the Republican front runner. And even though there are people out there who pretend to be pundits, whether they're on Facebook or elsewhere, who say, well, you know, Trump will eventually fade. You know, he's just going to fade. And my response to that was, well, if he fades, then who do the Republicans have at that point? You know, if he fades, they really don't have any other candidates. You know, it's flavor of the month. Ben Carson, as I said in a previous podcast, is probably not going to be an effective national candidate. These are all Scott Walker-like, one-dimensional candidates who have a couple of popular positions, and they're just going to get crushed when they finally step onto a national stage. There's only a few, and at best, really, at this point, I would say there's probably two, aside from Trump, and I'll let you figure out who they are, who are really viable potential presidential candidates. All right, that's my little political speech. But it's clear that the media, and particularly the New York media, thinks that Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. So they're working really hard to take Trump down in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know whether they're Republican moderates or Democrats, but I don't see what the difference is at this point. So, you know, the moderates are already, they published an opinion piece from a Republican moderate group that, you know, tutted and talked again about being the adults in the room and, oh, you know, this is just like it was when Barry Goldwater destroyed Republican chances to win in 1964, and it's like, yeah, and 10 years later, it was the rise of Ronald Reagan, and he was infused, and the party was infused and energized by the ideas that Goldwater and Rothbard and others presented, Henry Hazlitt and others, presented to a Republican Party that was sclerotic and old and not interested in any new ideas. Now, I don't know if the Republican Party is going to make it to the next era when those ideas take hold. But these things have to happen. And the moderates were bemoaning the fact that it's anarchy in the House with the resignation of John Boehner. And, you know, it's these damn crazy people who are, you know, the right wing crazy people who can't lead and don't have solutions and so forth. And some of that's true. You know, some of their stuff is very rhetorical, and so the idea that they can't lead, I suppose, is correct. But you can see what's starting to happen, and that is these moderates are terrified that somebody's going to come along and push them out of power. And I will talk about that in future podcasts, because I think that's one of the subtexts in this election that people need to be aware of and people should be thinking about. But the reason that they bring it up, and the reason that the New York Times ran three I don't know what you'd call it. I would say that they're three anti-Trump pieces in the last couple of days. So to me, that's a clear indication that Donald Trump is the Republican frontrunner, and that the powers that be in the East Coast established media, such as it is, it's a shadow of its former self, but you know, the people at the New York Times have decided that he's going to be the guy, to the extent that Bill Clinton goes on television and says, hey, don't you be criticizing my wife, as though she can't defend herself, you know, against Donald Trump's quote-unquote rhetorical flourishes. Okay, so now Trump is the front runner. One of the other pieces that I read, so you're going to start seeing a bunch of tomes about the follies and foibles of Donald Trump. And that's okay. I mean, that's part of the game. I get it. One of them is that he makes claims about going to Wharton and being first in his class, and he makes claims about, you know, his income and his wealth and everything else. And that's the picayune-ish, snarkish stuff, which I really don't care about. And then there was another one in The Atlantic, which, of course, has a picture of Donald Trump's Make America Great hat held by an attractive woman on sort of a serving plate. And it says, you know, these boneheaded, basically, it doesn't say boneheaded, but basically it says these boneheaded rubes out there who want, you know, oh, it starts out by saying it's white America. It's not anybody else in the world that's frustrated, that has low income or anything else. It's just white America that's really frustrated and angry. And it says it's just whites over 30 and under 30. And it's like, well, are you saying all whites? Are you saying specifically just those under 30 and those over 30? And I'm sure it's not quite that, but basically they're saying it's older, you know, 50-plus white men, and younger, under 30, whites. Well, why is that? And the answer is that people are piecing through. These are two different groups. Oddly enough, you know, the parent of the baby boomer parent and the millennial child are both in the same bag in many cases, where they're making an attempt to piece together a living with various part-time jobs and struggling to get by with an income that hasn't increased since before the recession and blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, of course they're upset and frustrated and have begun to quote-unquote question the American dream. Yes, that's true. So this thing was, don't these idiots realize that America was great in this halcyon age of the 1950s, when the unions were king and high and taxes were high? And I read that and I laughed out loud, because it talks about post-war U.S. prosperity. So the prosperity right after World War II. Now, there's a couple of points I want to make, and then I'm going to get off into what I was going to talk about in this podcast, which has nothing to do with all this politics. But there's a couple of points to make about post-war America. First of all, between 1945 and 1948-49, we had a couple of, if not two, but at least one pretty big recession, as I recall. I wasn't alive, but my knowledge of history is that toward the end of the Truman administration, we had some severe economic issues, probably most of which had to do with the debt at the end of the war, right? But here's the reason that America was prosperous during this period of time. And it wasn't the unions, and it wasn't high taxes. It was prosperous during this period of time because we blew up all the other factories in the world. And not only that, we sat astride the world. We were everywhere. We were in the known world. The United States had a strong military presence across the world. Even though we brought troops home after World War II, we controlled Europe. Western Europe, and our ally, of course, Russia, which at that point wasn't, by 1948, they really weren't our ally, but, you know, the winners of World War II, you know, received the spoils of the victory. We controlled Japan and South Korea, and we controlled, you know, the Middle East, and we controlled former British provinces all over the world as well. So the United States, you know, in a victorious position at the end of World War II, had enjoyed the industrial capability, which was unmatched because we blew everybody else's industrial capability up. And of course, you know, the Germans dismantled Russian industrial capability and Russian agricultural capability in the war, and neither moved it into what became East Germany, or destroyed it. So the Russians didn't have any industrial capacity to speak of either. And if it hadn't been for Lend-Lease, et cetera, the Russians would have perished in World War II. But anyway, well, I'm out here walking around and it is chilly. I mean, I've got a jacket on and I'm enjoying this fantastic fall weather with the full moon and everything. But it's weird how right after the equinox and the eclipse, we went right into colder weather. And it is true that, it's not cold, obviously, it's fall, but winter is coming. There's no question about it. And events like Sturgis, WeFest, the State Fair, things like this, and all these little town celebration let us know that summer is closing fast. I think today I probably mowed the lawn for the last time because we are about to enter the mini ice age that we call winter in the upper Midwest and in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And Greg Ryan of Ryan Plumbing and Heating wants to salute all of you who are getting ready and taking advantage and noting these change of season type things. So winter's coming, as I said, just like they say on the show Game of Thrones, which, by the way, I've been watching, and it's fantastic. And what they don't say is this is the time to have Ryan check your heating systems to get it ready for winter. Here's why. Aside from making sure that everything's working and that the filters are good, it's also all about integrating smart tech with your heating systems to make them more efficient. If you hadn't had your heating systems upgraded in the last 5 years, Ryan can upgrade you, and you will save a fair amount of money during this cold mini ice age that we may or may not experience this winter in the upper Midwest. I mean, it's going to get cold. I mean, it's going to snow, and you're going to have your heating on. So do yourself a favor. Call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul and get it checked. 651-224-4771. See what they can do about smart tech and saving you some money. In Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488. If you're remodeling a basement or a garage, ask about in-floor heating. They can do that for you if you haven't put the floors in, so it's definitely a timely call. For four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol where they've always been. Remember, you can call them in St. Paul at 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide means they go to the suburbs. So if you live in Plymouth, I always talk about Plymouth and Invergrove Heights, which are two different parts of the metro, but South St. Paul, you know, Champlin, Delano, their trucks are everywhere. So give them a call. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, and thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Very quickly, I got to mention Buzzlets, the other digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast. I mentioned Alpha Systems earlier, and I want to thank Buzzlets for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast digital side. Here's the deal. The banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com shows these devices from Buzzlet. You click on that, and you're going to learn about a new long-range device that enables you to get your kids' attention without screaming and yelling and waving your arms, whether they are at the water park or the soccer field or down the street, maybe they're playing peewee hockey, whatever. This helps you reach them without screaming at them. Buzzlets has started their Indiegogo campaign, which is like Kickstarter, and they would love to have your support, so click on that banner, watch the videos, and learn all about Buzzlets, and thank you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. The reason the United States had this tremendous economic boom from about 1951 or 52 had more to do with the fact that everything in the world was that people needed everything. We needed toasters, the world needed cars and tractors and everything. And the United States was the only place you could get that stuff made. And so we made it all. And of course we had an unparalleled economic boom, which really continued throughout and in spite of unions and high taxes. The other reason is that unions were popular during that period of time. In other words, they were at the peak of their power during that period of time because the Industrial Revolution was also at the peak of its power during that period of time. And if you grew up in the 1950s and 1960s, you know, this guy says, well, our prosperity ended in 1980, which I don't think is really correct because, unfortunately, I am old enough to remember the change between 1965 and 66 and 67 as a little kid to the 1970s, which actually feels more like now than, you know, people probably realize. If you're of the same era, if you're of the same vintage as I am, you know, you remember the oil shock, which had nothing to do with the Arab oil embargo or anything else. It had to do with all sorts of other things, and the just the crazy quilt of monetary policy and going off of the gold standard and, you know, all this other stuff that caused all kinds of problems. Price controls, wage controls, people couldn't afford to live in their houses anymore. They had to move and then they couldn't afford a house, and inflation and high interest rates, ending with a complete, reversal in the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980. So, you know, our prosperity started to fade in the 1970s, at about the same time that the U.S. hegemony, at least industrially in the world, began to fade, because of course Japan and other countries were, you know, coming along at that point in terms of building plants, and Europe had rebuilt and was beginning to compete with the United States. And so that's part of what happened. It had nothing to do with unions and high taxes. Unions and high taxes do not bring prosperity. But that's the kind of tripe that is being written these days in the media to try to take a nick out of Donald Trump's rhetoric, such as it is. All right? So then this got me thinking about time travel. And it got me thinking about time travel because everybody knows that I love history. History to me is really, really just exciting. Some people don't find it exciting, but I do. I think it's an amazing history. So I got to thinking, and I've often done this, and I've often talked about this, but I'm going to talk about it a little bit different way now. And that is, if you could pick an era to go back to, what era would it be? Of course, I'd want to go back to every era. You know, I've long had the theory that if you went back too far, you would probably have a heart attack upon arrival in a time that you had no reference points to. You know, our reality is assembled and created by reference points that we understand. You know, we understand the little signs that stick in the ground that have the fabric, and they sort of flap in the breeze. You know, we understand those things that gas stations or dealerships put up with the gorilla that kind of flap in the breeze or something like that. We understand stuff like that. And so we could go back to 1930, which I think would be fascinating. If you said, if you went back to 1930, what would you do? You know, first of all, I'd probably go back to 1928 because I'd want to be around for the stock market crash so I could buy up all the stocks and all that stuff. But what would I do? Well, if I went back in time and I was in the Twin Cities, first of all, where I would live right now, I would wake up in a field. So I'd be in a field somewhere. And I would like to, I'd love to see Minneapolis from a 1928 Minneapolis with them building the Fauché. I'd love to go to Swede Hollow, you know. I'd like to see that, and I would love to go over to St. Paul and hang out in downtown St. Paul. Because, as I've often said, the thing that's interesting about both of these cities and this part of the country is that at that time, these were, the largest cities in the world and the largest cities in the country weren't really that big. I mean, New York City at that time was probably 6 or 7 million people. Chicago was maybe 1.5 to 2 million. The Twin Cities were probably 300,000 or 400,000 at the time, maybe not even that much. So the cities themselves were a lot smaller. And then the regional area, you know, the towns like Hastings, where I was this week in a Red Wing, were just small towns. You know, there were little cow towns, little agricultural enclaves here and there, depending on where you went in the state. I would like to get on the Milwaukee Road and take that sort of modern bullet train thing to Chicago, and I of course would want first class accommodations, and go down to Chicago, spend some time in Chicago, and sort of check that out, and then I would want to go down to New Orleans for some reason. This was what I was thinking about tonight, ride the city of New Orleans down to New Orleans and sort of hang out in New Orleans at what I consider to be the peak of its, you know, modern existence, which is probably in the late 20s and early 30s, like most of these countries. And of course, I'd want to go to New York and everything else. But I wonder what would happen if I went back in time to the 1920s in terms of what I might learn about what living in America in the 1920s really was like, as opposed to what it is like today. But I wonder what it would be like, you know. And my theory, getting back to my theory, you know, it was that if you were to go back to ancient Greece or Rome, you probably wouldn't, you'd be very disoriented. You would spend a lot of time trying to reorient yourself because smells and sound and customs and things that we don't, you know, for example, archaeologists and historians of antiquity don't understand a lot of Roman history. Like, they don't know what those buildings, they really can only theorize what the second stories of buildings in Rome were for and what they did in them. And they can only theorize what the city of Rome was like at its peak. So if you went back in time, I think you'd just be, it wouldn't be shocking so much as it would just be really hard to figure out what was going on. And I think you'd be sick. I think you'd be physically ill until you kind of got your bearings, and it would be very difficult. It would take a long time for you to get your bearings. Personally, I think, you know, if I was going to write a time travel book, in every time travel, you know, people sort of just fall out of the sky and they poof into the time frame. So they poof into 1860 America or something, and then they have to deal with situations. You know, I think what would happen is you might poof into a time period if you could time travel, but I think it would take you a long time to orient. And I think the further back that you went, the longer it would take for you to orient. If you went back to a time that you could remember, it would probably be faster. But I think if you were to go back to the 1970s, even if you lived in the 1970s, you know, I think it would take you some time to sort of reorient to what things were really like. Well, just imagine going back to the 1970s you know, or the 1960s, you know, whatever time you grew up in, 1980s or whatever, you might be surprised at how disoriented you'd be because you forgot a lot of stuff that happened, and the waypoints and the checkpoints might be a little confusing. And that's what's interesting to me about time travel. You know, if I could do it, you know, how far would you go back and what would you do and all that stuff? And the thing is, you know, I think you'd struggle. And I think it would take some time to sort of get used to what was going on in the 1930s, you know, especially for me since I didn't live in that time period. You know, it would be fascinating to see. And here's why. And I want to make sure I get this point before I get to the end of the podcast, because I don't want to just, you know, sit here and talk about how cool time travel would be and what it would be like and everything, because it is. But, you know, I think that we might learn an awful lot about how different this country was in those eras and the challenges that the country faced and how people communicated and whether or not they were aware of it and how different we are in the sense that we are hyper aware of everything that happens, but at the same time, we seem oddly connected from it. Part of that is a function of technology in our modern society, but I think it would be fascinating to actually do it so that you could get a real clear indication, because you can read history books and you can hear theories about what was going on politically or socially in the 1920s or the 1840s or, you know, the 1960s. But being there and experiencing it and talking to people is a different thing entirely. And it's, I'll give you an example. So when the film Easy Rider came out, I don't know if you've ever seen Easy Rider. I love that movie. It was shocking. Like, it was today, people think about, oh, Easy Rider, yeah, you know, they watch it, it's funny and interesting and whatever, and there's hippies in it and stuff. But when that movie came out, people were just shocked by it. I think I was a freshman, maybe it was eighth grade, I don't remember. And I remember my best friend Steve got to go see it, and my mom would not let me go see that movie. And it was a big fight. She was like, "You are not going to go see that movie. It had drugs in it and long-haired hippies." And that was unusual, even in that era, that people in the neighborhood I grew up in, you know, there weren't that many hippies. And if you had one, you know, you knew where they lived and, you know, you knew, it's like, oh, those guys are hippies. That guy's a hippie, you know. And people think, oh, the 60s, it was, everyone was a hippie. No, that was, who was it? Steve Jobs said that the 60s happened in the 60s happened really. We lived through the 60s in the 1970s. You know, the 60s that people think happened did not happen in the 60s. It happened in the 70s. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. So when you hear these people say things like, you know, this is the way it was, and this is how it's playing out today, and all that stuff. You got to remember that going through that period in history, living through, whether it's World War I, whether it is, you know, any period of history, there's what the history books say, and how do they write history? Somebody who's an academic goes through all of the related academic material on an era. So they'll study every book written during the time period that they're studying. So let's suppose somebody's going to do a lecture or a book on New Orleans in the 1930s, because I'm interested in New Orleans in 1928, circa 1928. So they'll go through the library and they'll find every book on, and they won't go to Wikipedia either. They'll go through every book and every research paper. So every master's thesis in history and every doctoral thesis in history has anything to do with New Orleans, and they'll go through that stuff and they'll sift through it and they'll find, you know, they'll make notes and they'll read everything, and then they'll go look at source material. So they'll go down to, you know, the Illinois Central Railroad and get all the history on the city of New Orleans, the train. And they'll go to New Orleans and they'll tour sites, and then they'll go to the public library there, and they'll go to the, you know, universities there, and they'll look into all of the, you know, source materials and read letters and look at pictures and talk to people who are still alive from that period of time. And they'll assemble, you know, this information, and then they'll write whatever they're going to write that describes that period of time, depending on how good of a writer they are, or whether it's a PhD thesis or something like that. And that's the little piece that you'll read. But they still can't recreate the time for you to walk through it the way I am walking through this time, you know, September 2015, on a beautiful moonlit night in suburban America, walking down the middle of the street. You know, I am in a time period. You're listening to it in a different time period. You're probably listening to this. You could be listening to this 5 years from now, right? So the time that I'm walking through is a different time than the time that you're walking through. And I know how it feels. And I know, you know, I have the different waypoints that I recognize, the cars and the lights and the houses. And I've noticed one of the things that's changed recently is that now you see fluorescent lights or LED lights, which have a different color light frequency than the old incandescent lights that you used to see. The street lights are now the different. When I was growing up, the street lights were incandescent, and they had a glow, and then they had a pool of light, round light, underneath the street light. And today you have these huge yellow things. I forgot what they're called, and I don't care. But that's different. So there's all these different things, and we can't know what it was really like. So when somebody says, this is the way it was, and this is why this guy's political statement is stupid, because here's what happened, you have to understand that, you know, there are lots of factors in history that that come into play, and that's what I was thinking about today. I was just saying I encourage it. It's fun. It's a fun thought experiment to think that what period of time you would go back to and what it would really be like, and how many things that you think you would know about that you might be surprised about. And especially one of the things that I always got a kick out of when I go back to my old neighborhood is that everything seems so small, because of course I grew up, and when I was little, you know, everything seemed so big. And I don't have that experience walking through this neighborhood because I didn't grow up in this neighborhood, right? But when you go back to your old neighborhood, it's just weird. Like if you go back to your elementary school, it's really weird if it's still around, that you walk through and, you know, you're like, God, this place is so small, you know? And it didn't change. The size of it didn't change at all. Your size changed. Your perspective changed. Your perception changed. And that's what makes it look different or small or old or new or weird or anything else. It's your perception that changes. So think about all of the misperceptions that we might have about things that happened 50 years ago or 20 years ago. And then that's just exponentially multiplied by all of the different pieces in terms of things that have happened, and whether or not people were aware of them, and whether or not they were thinking about that, or whether things came as a surprise. Well, I'm home. So thank you for listening to podcast 419, the last podcast of September 2015. If you're listening in a different time frame, this is what it was like in September of 2015. Yeah, I'm a little weird, but I'm kind of, you know, it's weird. I'm just kind of tired. You know, these climate, climate change, meaning the season change every year, it's weird how it kind of sneaks up on you. Like, you know, you kind of want to sleep. I have this thing where I just kind of want to sleep right now. And of course I'm not, because I have too much to do. So I'm up earlier than usual and staying up later watching TV shows and doing things I shouldn't be doing. And it's just a struggle, my life. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 419, right? On Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, and of course, blogtalkradio.com. And I really appreciate the donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for the mobile podcast command unit. I am planning winter operations. So there's going to be oil changes and diesel fuel and perhaps some other things that need to be done in preparation for winter operations as we head into campaign 2016, and I'll be out covering. I'm planning on going down to Iowa. I'm planning on heading south because a lot of the states in the south are Super Tuesday states. And of course, I'm going to Florida, although I'm not going to leave until after Christmas or January. So, you know, there's some things that need to be done, and I am collecting donations for campaign coverage starting in 2016. And it's going to be fast and furious all the way through the rest of next year. So I'm really going to appreciate your donations on that for the mobile podcast command center. And thanks, you guys, for crowdfunding it and listening and supporting the Bob Davis Podcast at thebobdavispodcast.com. Don't forget the audiobook. If you want, we got the downloader fixed, so you're good to go on that. If you have any problems, send me an email.
It was late in December, the sky turned to snow, all around the day was going down.